Welcome to the most important office in any union, that of the steward. The steward is the union's closest link with its membership, and many a union has fallen upon difficult days when its steward structure has collapsed. Management immediately sees how vulnerable the union is and takes advantage of its weakness. One of the more pressing duties of any president is to make sure that the steward organization within his local is functioning efficiently. Nothing else he can do has any importance if this part of his local organization falls apart. As outlined on page 1 of your booklet, you, the steward, will become the union to your fellow workers. The office of a steward is one of responsibility and trust, and it can be very demanding. But if you perform the duties required, you will find it most rewarding. Bear in mind that you have the support of your whole union and its experience to call upon in the performance of your duties. As we said earlier, you must not only be the spokesman for your fellow workers in matters dealing with the contract, you are also their spokesman on matters dealing with their union. This ensures that the democratic process is maintained within the union, as the strength of any union must flow upward from the membership to the senior elected officers. If this delicate thread of democracy in the union is not guarded by the steward on behalf of the membership, the union will suffer, and as a result, so will the membership. Remember, there are no benevolent dictators in the world we know today, whether in government or unions. Now, on to page 2 of your booklet, Duties and Responsibilities. The major duty of a steward, of course, is to police the contract that you and your fellow workers operate under. To properly police that contract, you must read it thoroughly from cover to cover and fully understand it. There are many articles in a contract that are written in such a way that more than one interpretation can be given to the article. This is how most grievances begin. As this is the case, you must seek out the correct interpretation by checking with the master steward or the executive board of the local, who may have the correct interpretation on file. The correct interpretation may be as a result of a letter of intent signed by the company and the union following contract negotiations, or may result from a grievance meeting, or perhaps the findings of an arbitration board. If your local doesn't have anything like this on file, have the master steward or secretary of the local check with the next level in your union. If an interpretation is not available, take the matter up with the stewards, so one can be established for the particular article in question. By all means, make sure you have the union's official position before you tackle management. It's entirely possible that you may have come across an article never before in question, but your experience in a particular job function indicates to you that there may be a problem in this article in the future. By being familiar with the total contract, you can protect your fellow workers more efficiently, as many articles are related to each other, but in different areas of the contract. This knowledge will help in determining whether there has been a violation of the contract. If you expect management to respect the contract, you must make sure that the members you represent also honor it. Your members must remember that it is a formal contract between two parties, legal and binding, and that they cannot always obtain all they personally would like to see in it, but it is a result of give and take in negotiations. Management wants as few restrictions on its activities as you and your fellow workers want more in the way of job security, money, and fringe benefits. The realization by your members of this fact will make your job that much easier. Also, remember that intent, if not spelled out in a letter of intent with the contract, has little bearing on what you can expect from a questionable article. You may be able to force your point of view upon management through discussions or sheer weight of militancy of your members, but be certain of your strength. Before you take any action, consult with the other stewards, the master steward, and other local officers. Something you will find quite valuable is to really get to know your members. Really get to know them. You'll be amazed at the wide range of personalities you have to deal with, and this can have a direct bearing upon the manner in which you deal with the grievances. You'll be able to quickly sort out the real from the imaginary grievance. Pursuing an imaginary grievance to the bitter end just to placate a complaining member or to appear as a knight in shining armor can destroy your credibility for the time when a real grievance arises. It also places unnecessary pressures upon the master steward, the grievance committee, and your contract. So you see, nothing is gained by such action. You must face up to the fact that some members are complainers, no matter what you or the union does for them. So let your fair-minded actions on behalf of all the members speak for themselves. Know your contract and all the job functions of those you represent. Deal with all problems on a basis of intelligence and fairness. Your fellow workers will soon come to respect your judgment on their behalf. One way to cope with problems is to try to anticipate them and head them off before they affect your members. Whether the problem is a new piece of equipment or a different way of doing things, seek out the other stewards and master steward and discuss it with them, within the framework of the contract, and arrive at a course of action that you all agree on. Be sure you inform all levels of the union of your discussions and the final results of these discussions before any action is started. Then, discuss the problem with management and see if you are able to arrive at a mutually acceptable arrangement that doesn't compromise your contract. This type of action can result in management respecting your judgment and lead to much better dialogue in the future, making your job of representing your fellow workers that much easier. A trap too easily fallen into is one of unnecessarily attacking management. Don't do this in hopes of appearing better in the eyes of your fellow workers. They are quite intelligent enough to see through management's actions and its faults. All you have to do is listen to your members talking, and you'll discover this for yourself. Don't waste your energies on unnecessary actions. There's enough to do as it is. When dealing with management, do not make hasty decisions nor any side deals. Neither will enhance your position with management or the union. A hasty decision can come back to haunt you. Always, when confronted by a problem, take time to think it out carefully and do not hesitate to seek the advice of others. No one has all the answers. Once you've arrived at a decision, stick by it. This doesn't mean that once you've reached a decision, using the facts available to you, that you shouldn't alter your position if new facts come to light. It's quite possible for new facts to come forward after an action has been started. Just be sure that these new facts are indeed real facts and not manufactured ones. It isn't a sign of weakness to change your position in the face of new evidence. It will only add to your overall credibility and be of benefit when you are right. It means you're able to analyze each situation and come to a decision intelligently. Another important feature of your office is support your local officers, particularly in front of management. If you disagree with your fellow officers on a particular point, whether in the contract or in the policy of the union, discuss it with them and not with the whole world. All you do by complaining is throw suspicion onto the union or the officers concerned. As we said, discuss it with them either at the local level or at a more senior level of the union. It may be that they are in possession of facts that could change your opinion of their actions. Give them the opportunity to explain their actions or positions. The support of your fellow officers publicly will have an effect upon management. If they think you're in disagreement with one another, they'll try to take advantage of this crack in the union solidarity. On the other hand, support for your fellow officers will make management think twice about any plans to attack the union in the area of the contract. Remember that senior officers of the union rely upon you to bring forward the impressions and desires of the general membership. In every job function, there is an element of hazard. No matter how small it may appear, it must be taken into account in any safety discussions. It's the duty of the steward to enforce the safety standards of the union, and it is up to the stewards and the safety officer, if you have one in your local, to establish a set of safety standards. Consult with the Workmen's Compensation Board in your area, regional and federal agencies where available, and have as much of this information in writing as possible. A file of this information will be invaluable when holding discussions with management on safety standards. Make sure any discussions with management are set out in minutes that you can refer back to later. Actions required in the future will depend greatly on well-documented cases and discussions. Any discussions you, as a steward, enter into with your supervisor should be reported to the other stewards and the safety officer, if you have one, so there will be no breakdown in an official position. Stewards should attend all local union meetings and should make it a policy to keep members fully informed on matters pertaining to the union. Even if a local union sends out reports covering their meetings, the steward will be able to explain in greater detail what took place. To be in a position to report to the members he represents, the steward should be in receipt of information from all levels of the union. He may not be on the mailing list from more senior levels, which means that the local secretary must pass along all information he receives. The steward should keep after the local officers until he's satisfied he's receiving all information possible. On top of all these duties, the steward should seek out new employees and sign them up into the union. So you see, the duties and responsibilities of a steward make a formidable list and point out the great importance of the steward in any union. Before we leave this section on duties and responsibilities, there is one more thing you may be called upon to do for your fellow workers. If one of your group is called into the supervisor's office for any reason, check with him to see if he would like you to accompany him. This is particularly important if there's a possibility of disciplinary action being taken. There are cases where a personality conflict may occur between an employee and someone from management. The employee has the right to union representation. If the supervisor refuses to allow you to be present, you should refuse to allow the employee to see the management representative until you've had an opportunity to check with other stewards or local officers on the matter. Remember, when a person joins a union, he accepts that union as his bargaining agent and representative. Therefore, he expects that union to provide some measure of protection. That doesn't mean a member should be protected from well-deserved discipline. However, what must be watched is that justice is served. That's why a union representative should be present. Your union should send out standards of protection in an official document informing management that each employee it represents has this right. Do not spell out what will be done if management refuses to agree to this stand. Never give away advantages. On page 3 of your booklet, you will see several tips on dealing with grievances. As was pointed out earlier on this cassette, the worst thing you can do is process a questionable or imaginary grievance. However, you must listen attentively to the member who feels he has grounds for a grievance. Get all the facts correctly, then cross-check them with others, noting any differences or similarities. Policing a contract means being a detective as well. Before you formally file any grievance, see whether a discussion with the supervisor for the area or department concerned can resolve the problem. If not, have the griever sign the grievance form and prepare to file it. There are two schools of thought on whether a griever should sign the grievance form or not. One is that it makes sure that the member doesn't take the action lightly. The other is that if only elected officers sign the forms, it removes the member from any possible discrimination. Union officers are well protected against open discrimination. If they feel they are being discriminated against, they can file a grievance charging discrimination for union activity, which is a charge viewed seriously by the Department of Labor. It's up to your group of stewards to establish the best procedure to follow. If you decide a grievance should be filed, discuss it first with your master steward, who should be the chairman of your grievance committee. Depending upon the local, it's usually the duty of the master steward to process the grievances. That is, send each copy on to its proper destination, making certain that the grievance is filed within the time limits and in the manner set forth in the contract. It is quite correct for the union to do all this distribution. Depending again upon the local concerned, the next step is the grievance meeting, which we shall discuss later. Before we do, though, let's take a short step back to the steward's discussions with the supervisor. As you'll note on page 4, there are many points to be considered, all important. Probably the most difficult one is remaining friendly and pleasant, carrying on a discussion without losing your temper. Yet this is one of the more important ones. The moment you lose your temper, you've lost the argument. Remember, the supervisor is management's frontline man, just as you are the union's frontline man. He may see you only as another employee, but you must remember that the moment you begin acting on behalf of the union, you become his equal. His interpretation of a given article will, in many cases, be different from yours. It's up to you to try to persuade him to your point of view. For openers, inquire about his family, health, or anything that you feel is of interest to him. You can learn a great deal about his mood in this way, and it will help to determine your line of argument. If he's friendly, or if you feel that a few moments' chatter can make him a little easier to deal with, do so, because it will ease your road to success. There's no need to launch full tilt into your case. If he's in a sour mood, make your approach slowly, easing into the question of the grievance. Calm dialogue can accomplish much, and is not a sign of weakness. Anyone can rant and rave. Successful diplomats cajole, reason calmly, compliment where necessary, to achieve the results they seek. If it works for them, why not try it? Be sure of your facts and look the supervisor right in the eyes when speaking to him. Try at all times to sit or stand on a level with him. Some management personnel use psychology on union representatives or employees when dealing with them. One way is to have their chair slightly higher than yours. Another is to try to set up employee-employer relationships quickly by making remarks about your job. Ignore these tactics and stick to the job at hand, being an efficient elected officer of your union. On the other hand, the supervisor may lack confidence. Then it could be an advantage for you to remain standing during your discussions, thereby subtly dominating him. Never fall for management's sly statements that because you're an elected officer, you must show what you can do. Even though you are an elected officer, you are not under as much pressure to succeed in your job as he is in his. He has more to lose in personal prestige than you. If you remember that, you'll be in a better position to deal with management. When stating your case, be brief and clear. Do not daydream when the supervisor is talking, trying to set up your next line of argument. Listen to him. He may be saying something you are quite unprepared for that can be used to your advantage. Make notes, if necessary, short ones that key thought patterns. Above all, don't horse trade with the supervisor. Be certain of what is required to correct the problem. Disagree enthusiastically, but with control, not heatedly, because, as we stated earlier, it's the end of the argument if you lose your temper. Seek a settlement, not a fight, even if you personally cannot stand the supervisor. Keep personalities out of your discussions. Stick to the facts of the case as a defense lawyer or a prosecutor would. Achieving a settlement at this level is most desirable. When on the offensive, and it appears that victory may be yours, be gracious. Don't go for the throat and the last drop of blood, no matter how justified it may seem at the moment. You must always leave an opponent an avenue of escape to save face, or you may make an enemy you'll come to dread meeting in the future. Though some managerial personnel seem extremely ruthless, they respect a good fight and can accept defeat. It's also true that there are some who are less intelligent. However, you, as an officer of a union, must always be tough but fair-minded, never vindictive. Page 5 brings us to the conclusion of your discussions at this level and could also apply to the grievance meeting itself, which is upcoming next in our talk. Don't go on too long with your argument. When you feel you've stated your case as clearly as you can and feel no further discussion is advisable, close your case, seeking a settlement that recognizes your union's position. It's impossible to list all the closing comments you can use. The ones listed are only representative. You must feel out the situation and the individual that you're dealing with. It's at this moment that the whole argument for your case can come apart if you suddenly become belligerent, trying to bulldoze a settlement out of the supervisor. All you'll succeed in doing is getting him angry and then obstinate. Remember, as desirable as it is to settle here, you still have other avenues open to you. Success will come from a persuasive manner in the face of bitterness. Don't strike out angrily because the supervisor needles you. That is how he may try to defeat you. Show him you are a professional and mature in the face of his immaturity. Look him squarely in the eyes and calmly close your case. If he wants to continue and does so in a sneering manner, do your best to terminate the conversation. If he will not settle the problem, state calmly that you have no alternative but to take the grievance to the next step available to you in your contract. Sometimes it can be helpful to suggest he consider the situation and you'll return in an hour or the next day. This may allow the supervisor an opportunity to save face, particularly if he's made a fool of himself. If he does settle, don't talk too much. Say you wish to report the decision to those concerned. If at all possible, seek something in writing so there can be no misunderstanding. Page 6 in your booklet, and now we reach the grievance meeting. Should your discussion with the supervisor not be successful, this is the next step to be taken. Now is when all the facts you've collected will come in handy. This is a real debating forum, and your notes and details are most important here. Until now, you did not have to file the grievance, even though you may have had it filled out and signed. But to be able to discuss it here at the grievance meeting, it must have been filed. That is, a copy must reach management within the time limits laid out in your contract. Before meeting management at this grievance meeting, your committee, headed by the master steward, should meet and fully discuss the agenda. You may have several grievances to discuss, plus some items that are of a general nature for discussions only. Never go to a grievance meeting unprepared. Be sure you know what you're talking about, which points must be stressed, and the settlements desired. meet as a committee the evening before to properly consider all the items on the agenda. When you arrive at the meeting room, your committee should sit on one side of the table and theirs on the other. No one should be at the head of the table. If their chairman is sitting there, then your chairman should seat himself at the other end, facing him. Always remember, you are their equals. They represent management, and you represent all the employees in your bargaining unit. Between you, there exists a legal contract setting out both of you as equal partners in that document. You'll soon discover, as the debate begins, that all your preparations were well worth your time. These management representatives are experienced in dealing with grievances, and even if you hit one who is relatively new to the job, don't try to snow him. It could backfire later. Facts, hard and cold, with intelligent comments, will win more for you than trying to bluff your way through. That doesn't mean you shouldn't try a bluff or two. Just pick the right time for it. A good poker player will play the bluff, sometimes when the hand is good as well as when it isn't. Never get rattled. If they hit you with something you were not aware of, take it in your stride. Pause briefly to consider it. You're under no obligation to settle anything at that moment or even at that meeting. If it is something that could affect your whole case, you can always table that particular item and say you wish to examine the facts in light of this new information and bring it forward again at another meeting. The thing to remember is, never be hasty about any decisions because they're binding and can have a profound effect on your group, local, and union. If necessary, call a caucus of your committee to discuss it fully. Trying to deal off the top of your head can be disastrous unless you're a very good negotiator. See where the debate is heading, and then take your action. Insist upon accurate minutes of the meeting, showing the nature and language of the grievance, management's position, your position, and the settlement or results of the meeting. Not only on the grievance, but the discussion items as well. You must have a record of what you did. Both parties should sign these minutes, as they may be used in later hearings. It is important at these meetings to watch for any sign that management is trying to establish employee-employer relations. They may try this by asking your committee to leave the meeting room while they discuss a point amongst themselves, particularly if the meeting is being held on their premises. You should point out that the meeting room must be considered neutral territory, and therefore the party that wishes to caucus should leave the room. Also, whoever does leave to caucus should have a room available to caucus in, not a hallway. It's advisable to caucus in an area where you can discuss your position openly amongst yourselves without fear of being overheard. The manner in which you open the meeting is not too different from the one you used when you went to see the supervisor. Don't rush headlong into your case. Begin by making friendly comments on the weather, then on anything neutral about the operation, sounding them out as to their disposition. Open your discussions by reading out your grievance and the area of your contract which you feel is in violation. Then sit back and wait for any comment from them. Don't shoot all your facts at the starting gun. If they should say that they don't feel it is a grievance, ask them how they can feel that is the case. Try to get them to play their cards first, with you countering with yours. Lay out your position carefully, step by step, a little at a time. As we've stated so often, don't be hasty in anything you do in your dealings with management. Even sit back and pause, as though thinking about the question for a while. Make notes while the discussions are going on that you can refer to in your rebuttals. Use this note-taking as a device to cool down a situation and to collect your thoughts. Debating is much like a chess game, or checkers if you don't play chess. Each move should be planned a bit in advance without tipping your hand. Granted, much of what we say will come with experience. However, if you play it cool and calm and have your facts lined up, you should find your first encounter stimulating. Remember, don't be nervous about meeting them. You are their equals. Also, don't become anxious if you should lose a few. After all, in many cases, it is your interpretation against theirs, something to remember for the next set of negotiations. Also, if it is an important article, you should still have other avenues open to you in your contract, which should provide for further grievance levels and, if necessary, arbitration proceedings. Each step requires greater information, and that's where the accurate minutes and all the notes you made will come in handy. Don't try to keep the facts in your head. It just won't work. Write them all down. A settlement at this level is easier to arrange. Unless they're in the habit of playing games, the language of a settlement shouldn't be too hard to set out in the minutes. Again, if you win, don't brag about it or try to squeeze that last drop of blood from management. You've only won one fight, not a whole war. Many of the closing comments we mentioned for the supervisory level can apply here as well. Now for some general tips for stewards. You'll find the ones listed speak for themselves. Study them carefully. You'll soon understand that as you assume responsibilities, your whole manner must change. The second list on the page is a list of what the members will seek. People, no matter who they are, all want what you see listed here. Probably you do yourself. Like everyone in the world, your members need a sense of security. Otherwise, they will become aggressive, not only to you, but to everyone, trying to play one person off against another or against the union itself in the hope of impressing management with their importance and thereby increasing their job security. They most certainly need a sense of contributing to the job and to feel important. No one wants to think that he's a nobody. You may have to give your fellow workers' morale and ego a boost once in a while. They also need a feeling of self-expression, so they may buttonhole you to discuss items they feel are important, or they may try to dominate a meeting. Recognize their needs and be generous with your time. When you become an elected officer, you give up a certain degree of privacy and time. The experience you gain, however, will help you grow into a more understanding and mature person. Another of your important duties is to keep your members informed of what is going on in their union, in their contract, and in their jobs. Make a point of meeting your fellow stewards for talks frequently, even at lunch, to keep up on events. Your master steward should set up a system of meetings at which time you should receive information on your union, as well as discuss your contract and its effectiveness. It's through meetings like this that you will become more informed and be able to pass along more information to your members. It will also help you discuss and plan for future meetings with management, particularly grievance meetings. On to page 9. You'll find 5 important W's. They should be studied carefully and followed closely when dealing with any grievance. Some people will grieve to feel important, many to protect the contract, and some to protect those too timid to look after themselves. Check this list so you can sort out what type of grievance you're dealing with and whether it's real or imaginary. Real ones demand enough of your time, as it is, without having false ones being filed. Throughout this discussion, we've referred to a master steward. In every operation, there should be a master steward. Some locals call him a unit chairman. However, the job function is the same. A master steward should be selected by the stewards from amongst themselves. This person should be their spokesman and the chairman of the local's grievance committee. The local president looks to this man to help run the steward operation efficiently and smoothly. If the master steward needs help in the running of this operation, he can go to the executive board for assistance and advice. The master steward is usually a person who not only has ability but some experience in union affairs. All grievances should be filed through him in the processing function. He should be the chairman for the local's committee at all grievance meetings. If management has anything to discuss with the union on the contract, it should first check it out with the master steward, who in turn will take it to the executive board if he feels it needs their consideration. He's in the chain of command between the executive board and the stewards, and should speak on behalf of the stewards. In closing, we wish to bring to your attention the sheet showing the various forms of union security. It's wise to be aware of the various options available. Use your booklet as a reference guide and as a reminder of what has been said here. Experience, plus using what we've laid out here, should help make you an efficient steward and a credit not only to yourself, but to your union as well. We wish you well in your position as steward, and trust it will bring you well-deserved recognition for doing one of the most important jobs in any union.